This is Thrace Relations, a podcast about Spartacus, the television series on Starz Channel. Hello, I'm Em.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Paul.
Jennifer Connelly and that double dildo. God damn it, that was awful. You can still hear it.
And the double dildo is a perfect segue into...
Welcome back to Thrace Relations. Before we start this podcast, we just want to ask you viewers, the ones who decided that you really like us, or even if you really hate us, if you could please go to iTunes and give us a review or throw some stars at us, that would be awesome. That's the best way to get us attention and get more people aware of our existence on iTunes. And also, you can like us on our Facebook page. You can go to thracerelations.com and click on the icon for the No Ship Network Facebook page and, you know, like us. Okay, we are talking about Spartacus, Blood and Sand, Episode 8, Mark of the Brotherhood. Last episode, we saw Spartacus embrace his destiny. So, what are your thoughts on this episode, Paul and Steve?
I don't know. I was expecting more from it. I'm kind of disappointed. I'm not going to lie. They kind of lost me a little bit on this episode.
How come?
Just too much sex. I don't think it was needed. The last few episodes have been so good with good storyline. You get some good fight scenes. You know, they build all these characters up, and then it almost makes me feel like they cheapened it up. Like the middle of an old Cinemax movie where it's like, okay, we've had some action, time for some sex. You know, it just seemed cheap to me.
On the other hand, I loved it. I thought it was a great episode. I thought it was a good episode the first time I watched it, you know, because I'm part of the rewatch. And this time I thought it was an even better episode. There's a lot of little things in this episode that build up to, I don't want to say a bigger or better whole, but it's just a, it's a real detail-oriented episode, and I can appreciate it on the rewatch a lot more than I did the first time.
Because of what's going to happen later down the road, it's a setup.
Well, actually, not even being that, really, because I think some of the other episodes were good because there was a setup, you know, coming down the road. But this one is, and I'm sure that you're going to mention this, but this is a direct parallel to episode 2, Sacramentum Gladiatorum.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, when you've
absolutely.
Got, and we'll talk about that when we get to the appropriate part. But
I can see that.
I like this episode a lot. So.
Yeah, I like the episode too, obviously. I don't think there's an episode I don't like. And I'll just, you know, that'll be evident as we talk. But so I'm going to just go ahead and go into the recap here. The episode opens with Spartacus laying on his pallet in his room, which is where the parallel starts. Because you remember in Sacramentum Gladiatorum, he's unconscious, Christ-like on a slab. And so this episode starts in the same way, except he's not unconscious. He's just asleep. I think he's asleep. I know he's reflecting on his past. His recent victories, actually, in the arena. He's just reveling in it.
Like a piece of, because you could kind of see a smile on his face.
Yeah.
And he was enjoying a little bit of peace and quiet, because you have to know now he's in his own room. He gets the champion's room that used to be occupied by Crixus, because, you know, he's the champion of
Capua. It is definitely Crixus's old room.
It looks like
okay, don't quote me on that. I don't think it's definitely Crixus's own room, but I mean, how many champion rooms are they going to have? You know what I mean? And Crixus has been spending most of his time at the Medicus, so I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's his, you know.
He might be right.
But it's a pretty cool montage scene, because it just shows him just offing gladiator after gladiator. And you can see Badiatis up there in the stands just like, yes!
Oh, he's loving it.
But the better part of that is the look on Alethea's face, because apparently she was there for all of them. And this bitch doesn't have anything
she's
better
not gonna
to do.
She's going
to
miss a gladiator
match. Yeah. But she's just like, the look on her face is just like I think I've said it before, but somebody just put some shit on their fingers and wiped it right under her nose, you know, and she's just like, ugh, I'm tired of seeing this Thracian and his victories.
Like, don't you have any other contenders other than Spartacus? And then Solonius has to chime in and say, yeah, he doesn't have anybody else as good as Spartacus. And they mention that Crixus is still recovering, but he will soon be a contender again. But I just wanted to note that one of the, actually it was the first, when they were reflecting, or Spartacus is reflecting on his recent, you know, winnings in the arena. He nut slices that one gladiator.
Yeah.
Like right
yeah.
under his nuts.
Well, he does a baseball slide right between his legs and just lifts the sword up. And then he comes up behind him and just pokes it out through his head.
Well, if you're going to finish somebody off,
yeah,
go for the dong.
There's worse ways to do it. That was done in style.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, we already mentioned the conversation on the balcony. And but Bodiatus still tries to win Alethea over even further and asks her to join him while he purchases a new batch of recruits.
And, of course, you know, he's playing to her carnal desires to watch gladiators and all these, you know, mountains of manly flesh and stuff. And she plays right into it, though. She doesn't even make a pretense at it not being that. She's just kind of like, okay, yeah, that'd be great.
Well, you see her, like, sit there and think about it, and then it dawns on her what she can do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she gets excited.
Then you see Lucretia's face, and she realizes right away, this is a good plan, and she jumps right in. And
hook.
Yep, and starts to help Bodiatus out with, you know, manipulating Alethea. So now we have the market, and Bodiatus is joined by Doctore and Asher. They see Salonius, and they call to him. And Salonius and Bodiatus trade thinly veiled allusions to Avidius's death and threats of violence toward each other.
Salonius basically knows that Bodiatus was behind Avidius's death, but he can't come out and say it because he doesn't have proof.
That's because there was a similar conversation on the balcony a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's the whole, you know, kind of like, I know what you did. And then he gave him the, well, I know what you did.
Yeah. So yeah.
Bring it up and I'll bring it up. And we're both in deep shit. Because really, I mean, he has proof that, you know, he tried to get him killed, so.
Yeah.
And now he's saying, and Bodiatus is saying, I could do it to you next. So the auction begins, and I thought the auctioneer looked like a combination between Andy Serkis and Norman Reedus.
That's bad.
Andy Reedus.
I don't think that's bad.
Andy Reedus. Yeah. The Andy Reedus Show.
Norman Serkis. So it looks like the only men of promise here, according to Doctor, are the German brothers and Ross Trent. So Bodiatus makes a ballsy, albeit stupid move of buying Ross Trent along with everybody there. He spends 100 denarii and just buys everybody to what he thinks is going to crush Salonius's pride into the ground.
Yeah, he flexed.
Doctore kind of told him, too. He said, these guys aren't worth that much money. You know, there's only two of them who are worth the shit. You just bought the whole lot for 100 denarii. But now let me ask you guys this. I didn't think about it the first time, but I thought about it this time. Do you think that he can spend that much money now because he's been winning, you know,
absolutely,
in the arena?
He's,
you know,
showing off.
Like, spend it without any consequences?
Yeah. Because you got to think, his wife not too long ago was selling her necklace to the same guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's saying, well, you know, just like he said, I can have you taken out. This is how much money I'm sitting on. It's just kind of like a show of force. Like, I'll buy all of them.
I guess what I'm getting at is, because Spartacus has been winning so much, do you think he can actually afford to do that? Maybe not comfortably, but he does have the money.
I think he can do it.
Yeah.
He's probably like his one clothes, where he's living paycheck to paycheck in a way where if his next paycheck didn't come, it would suck. Like, he could probably do it right now, but it's not really like a long-term good idea, especially, you know, since so much weighs on a living champion. I mean, Spartacus he's a human being. He can still be taken out.
Yeah, but you know? I think he still has Crixus in the wings. He's up and healing, though. So in his mind, he's got two champions in the stable. And in a society,
I guess at this point, he thinks like that.
Yeah, at this point. And in a society where you're making moves and doing different things just to try and get further, your biggest rivals there crush his spirit. Don't even give him a chance to buy anything new because you killed most of them from what the conversation before sounded like. So
this is an expensive, cheap thrill.
Hey, sometimes it's worth it, though.
And then he turns to the girls that are standing there and he goes, maybe you should focus on the whores and put them in the arena. You haven't been having too much luck with men. And then everybody's just all like, ooh.
Mm-hmm. And it happens in modern day, too. So, you know, you work with somebody, they buy a nicer car than you just to kind of be like, oh, I bought a nicer car. Or, you know, you meet people like that in life.
Yeah, they got to one-up everything.
Mm-hmm.
just to prove it, even if it hurts them in the long run.
Oh, absolutely.
They just gotta prove that, you know, mm-hmm. they can do this or that.
So next thing we see, Crixus struggling to please Lucretia.
Sexually.
Sexually, yes.
The beginning of the Cinemax episode.
And he's really having a hard time. This is where there's another point where we can see that she does love him because she kind of lies to him, I think, because he says, did I please you? And he says, or she says, does your cock stand dry?
You can see it on her face, though.
That she was just, not pleased.
She's just like, what's going on here?
Well, so you think concern. This was the first time they've had sex since he's been injured?
Maybe.
I don't know. It could be. Could be.
Okay. So Navy has been acting as lookout. She comes in and warns that the Domino's returning. So Lucretia tells him to get out. They Navia and Crixus walk together, and Navia mentions that she's troubled by the fact that Lucretia and he have been able to share something that they have not as of lately, right? Because they had sex before.
It made it sound like they've never gone all the way.
But they did,
didn't
they?
No, I think what I got from that is she said that we haven't been able to share this, you know, lately because he's been hurt. You know what I mean? So she cares about him, actually, and she wants him to heal up before they do any hanky-panky. But Lucretia is just, you know, she just wants him to perform.
You're up and walking.
Yeah, exactly. Get over here.
Which I don't think anybody ever has private sex in this building. Someone's always watching. Someone's always watching.
It's usually Navia.
Navia, and later on in the episode, there's other scenes, and someone just kind of like stands there and watches for a minute.
Oh, you're talking about Spartacus when he passes Barra?
Yeah, there's no private sex.
Yeah, it's
always a group thing, kind of. There's some pervert.
They don't
watching.
Really have doors. They have either just like open passageways, or they have just, you know,
no privacy.
Not cages. But...
So do you think they poop without doors?
Oh yeah.
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 Apparently, the kitchen in the training area is also used as a latrine.
Well, look at their doctor. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. I learned that in a book, not from the show. So.
Oh, okay.
He's not just a
so
doctor.
That's actual.
That's the historical fact, apparently.
I'm not just the scabo doctor. I'm the cook.
Yeah.
And the bathroom janitor.
I use my clothes to clean the bathroom.
And then I use them as bandages.
I'm also a psychiatrist. If you have any problems, just talk to me.
So now we have training yard. Spartacus is making his way over to the gladiator onlookers. He circles Crixus. And this is when they brought the new recruits out. Spartacus walks out there. And then, you know, Crixus is there. And he kind of just eyes him. Walks up and you see kind of Crixus just kind of look at him, but I don't know if he's cowering or if he's just, I don't think he's cowering, but it's hard to describe the.
It's hard to say.
Emotion or.
Even throughout the episode, they make Spartacus look taller for some reason. To me, it always looked like Spartacus was standing a little straighter. It was almost looking down at Crixus, which before it was the opposite. I always thought Crixus was taller, but. There was a couple shots where he actually looked taller than Crixus. So
the impression I got from that whole thing isn't that he was cowering. What it reminded me of was wolves, and you've got, you know, a couple of alpha wolves, but one of them is wounded. Mm-hmm. So he's not cowering away from the other one, but he's realistic, you know, and he realizes that he's wounded and he's hurt. So this one is more dangerous than him at that point. So that's he kind of gave him that regard in a sense.
I like that. Mm-hmm. So, like episode 2, we have the line of, this is in the Sacramentum Gladiatorum, we had the line of new recruits on display, the one that Spartacus was a part of, and Curza, and Varro also. And so now we have this new group, and we also have the already initiated watching in a smug-like fashion. And Doctori asks, what is beneath your feet, just like they did in episode 2. And it's one of the German brothers who answers sand. And his brother, whose name is Agron, says, idiot.
So then this is the part where it really parallels that other episode, because then Doc Tory turns to Spartacus and he says, Spartacus, what is beneath your feet?
Yeah.
Whereas he did that to Crixus in the first episode, but Crixus is kind of just in the shadows watching.
Yeah, he's now in Crixus's role from episode 2. He's doing well. And so they have to attend their master just like they did on episode 2. And Bodiatus makes his announcement. Alethea, though, is at this particular ceremony. And she's excited, actually, by Doc Tory's speech about fucking death. You can see the look on her face as she's really liking that speech. And Lucretia notices this and she pounces. This is when she's like, okay, so pick out one. And Bodiatus joins in this and encourages Alethea to go ahead and purchase a recruit for herself. And this is where we learn the Latin word virtus, which roughly translates to manliness, because Bodiatus says, let's see these men's virtus.
So then they all have to take off their loincloths and stand in a row. And, you know,
got a lot of butt shots.
Yeah. And it's pretty blatant, because, I mean, she's obviously not a Lunista, mm-hmm. to, you know what I mean, at all. So, I mean, you're looking at dick sizes here, and mm-hmm. that has nothing whatsoever to do with your fighting capability, obviously. So they get to the end of the row, and Ross Trent's got, I mean, he's got a John Holmes hanging down there, and it's just like, so of course she says the one on the left.
Varro called it the horse cock.
Yeah, because he was putting money on him.
Yeah, he was putting money on.
I'll take
the one with the horse cock. On
And I don't know if they did like prosthetics for this one or what, but
I think it was.
If that wasn't, then that thing's
something about
be,
the way it was hanging. I don't know.
That thing's got to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, he was packing heat.
You see, Agron kind of look down at it for a second too. Just thought I'd note that.
The brothers were
German.
Yeah, they didn't like him because of it, right? Didn't they already start talking shit?
Right, no, that it was later on. They were just
later on. Yeah. I thought they might have said something in line. I could be wrong though.
They do say, yeah, they're having conversation, and they're saying it's not your words; it's the idiot who's saying them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
So of course, Alethea chooses him to be her.
Which isn't surprising. Plus, he's Gaul like Crixus, her
exactly
first love.
Yep, she mentions that too, from the same lands as Crixus. So we have a scene where Bodiatus and Lucretia have a brief celebration regarding their success with Alethea. In the next scene, Lucretia and Alethea are having a couple's massage. Alethea is quite pleased with her new addition. She plans to brag to her friends, who I call the Heathers. Hmm. She brags about these friends to Lucretia, who are not of Lucretia's acquaintance, being that these ladies are of note, especially Licinia, who is Marcus Crassus' cousin. And apparently Marcus Crassus may be the wealthiest Roman, supposedly. Lucretia tries to get Alethea to invite her friends over, which leads to Alethea dropping some more insults.
Oh, some nasty ones, too.
Oh, yeah, she says, oh, you wouldn't know that. You wouldn't really be able to hang out with these girls. They're proper Roman women, and they only hang out with people of equal stature.
Practically called her a rube.
Yeah.
And she's like, all right, fine, we'll do this, but I have to do your hair, because your hair is not
up to
standard. And the look on her face, on Lucretia's face, was pretty good.
Yeah.
But you know what? She succeeded, so she got what she wanted. Lucretia did.
It's the wig. The blonde wig. The red wig, it wouldn't have worked.
So Spartacus and Varro are talking over what has changed. And Varro mentions that the die call his name, and he answers. Varro is still a victim of his own demons. And we also see, this is all in the cafeteria, we see that Spartacus has not totally adopted Crixus's role, because he's not game with how they treat the new recruits as far as the food and things like that go. Mm-hmm. Crixus is trying to
haze
like they did in episode 2. Mm-hmm. And Spartacus tells Crixus he does not take the lead, he follows.
And he stood up to give him that speech.
Yeah.
He gave him, I'm the big dog in the pen. The look. That's what I mean. If him looking actually taller than Crixus, that's the part of the episode that it really made me think if he was actually taller or not.
He is taller than him.
Is he?
Yeah.
In the other episodes,
maybe not by much. But I think he is. I think that that actual actor, you know, Andy Whiffle, is taller than him.
You just straightened his back out.
I agree with what you're saying. They make him seem more straight back than taller in this episode because they're trying to show you that he's the cock of the walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it draws a good line of I don't know what the word would be, kind of like to show the difference between Crixus and Spartacus and the way they handle things.
Crixus is hurt now, and he's the one who's all covered up.
And he's saying, listen, I don't give a shit about these guys, you know, just as much as you don't, but they deserve to eat before they die. You know, whereas, you know, Crixus and Barca and all those guys would have just, you know, doing that, like, hyena laugh that they were doing before. He did, like, you know, Spartacus is just kind of laying down the law. He says, I'm the champion of Capua now, and that's not going to happen.
Which Asher was loving the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you could just see him, his mouth's open, and he's like, oh.
He's tasting the humiliation of Crixus with obvious pleasure. And then Crixus has a pretty interesting line. He says, the man who follows is forever at your back. I was going to ask what you guys thought of that statement, but I don't know if there's really much to elaborate.
No, I mean,
it's a pretty,
it's a threat.
So not even
but
a
it's
veiled
like a,
threat.
It's a threat, but it's also like a truth of life, too, I think, at the same time, something like that. Because I don't think Crixus means harm to Spartacus, because he could have done that already.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think if he could get back to where he was with stature, being the king of the Ludus and, you know, the man on the walk, I wouldn't, or if it was to save his girl, I wouldn't put it past him to kill him.
He's maybe to save Navia, but he really buys into that brotherhood. I mean, that's why
it's true.
The end happened as it did this episode. So Ross Trent thanks Spartacus, and Spartacus responds by saying men shouldn't die with empty stomachs, which is not very comforting to say to anybody. So the next scene we have Asher is doling out winnings, mostly in the form of whores, because I guess most men say, forget the coin, get me a whore.
Oh, when you're stuck in a pit in behind bars.
Yeah.
And you know, Asher's got a good little side deal going on here.
He
because
probably doesn't get those whores at cost.
Yeah, he's getting the whores for cheaper than those guys would have to pay for them. So
he's
basically saying,
wholesale.
I'm not going to give you your winnings. I'm going to let you have this girl. But the girl only costs 75, but, you know, they would have got 100.
In that one episode they were making.
The pock-faced guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, old Dirty McGee.
What I'm saying is he has a side deal and he's pocketing.
Yeah, he's making money.
You know, he's getting probably 25% profit off of this because the whores don't cost as much as the winnings that these guys would have got.
Probably
as long
why
as he doesn't get their asses bloody in return.
Mm-hmm.
There's that.
And it's probably why he didn't like Barca because Barca had his girl living with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did.
So he had to pay his winnings to him.
Or just have him killed.
Yeah.
You know, that was the other option.
That worked out.
Bastard.
So, so he's doling out horrors, and Crixus asks Asher, where is his coin? And Asher relishes in this moment of reminding Crixus of his current status among the gladiators as being the wounded one who's not earning anything. And he says, if your wounds will ever heal. And I feel like Asher's playing a game. He knows that's going to goad Crixus into doing something rash, which he does do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Before he's fully healed. And then Asher tempts Varro with a whore.
Don't forget about Crixus bitching out, talking about, I'm going to tell Xena about it. What's her name again?
The Dominus.
Was a very empty threat. And Asher knew it. I'm going to tell.
It makes you wonder what kind of system they have, though, going on with that. Because why would Crixus feel like he deserved money if he hasn't been in the arena for some time?
He's probably never not gotten a paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, in his eyes, he still has earned it just for everything he's done in the past, maybe.
Yeah.
And how often does
maybe
he not
sees
get
it
a
as
paycheck?
A salary or
probably
something
his first
like
major injury, you know. Yeah. Should have signed a contract. No,
anyway, he sees that he helped Spartacus get that victory, so.
Absolutely.
Wonder if he got anything at all for that.
Probably not. probably went all to Spartacus. I didn't even think about that.
So, yeah, so we see that Varro bends to temptation and he does get this whore. And
poor Tommy Gunn.
And he Spartacus sees this too.
Yes, that does an awkward scene because Spartacus just stops at the edge of
his
cell.
He watches.
And he just kind of watches for about 10 or 15 seconds. And
yeah,
then
and then
Varro
waits to make
him.
Eye contact with him.
Yeah, he stops like he stops for a second, looks over his shoulder.
Like, he couldn't have said the next day while they were eating breakfast, been like, yeah, I think it was kind of wrong that you were banging that whore. He just had to give him that parental, you know, disapproval
look
and shake his head
right
then and there. You know, like, I can see your butt right now. And I'm just not approving at all.
I don't know, man.
I'm not going to watch.
That's what I'm saying. There's no privacy.
My friend have sex with a whore and just stand there and watch and just shake my head. It's going to be like,
yeah, he's just kind of like, oh, my bad. I'm walking.
We'll talk about this later.
So now we have another parallel scene that's similar to episode 2. We have new recruits who are having a conversation, and they're having a conversation about Spartacus and their own chances. And this is where that conversation takes place, where Agron and his brother call I think his name is actually Segafax or something like
Segafax,
that.
Segafax, yeah.
Yeah, Segafax. But Ross Trent.
Segafax?
Yeah, Segafax.
Segafax.
He's a Gaul.
Those damn Gaul.
Gauls and their stupid names.
All the Gauls and their dongs. Not black guys, it's the Gauls.
Okay, so and next we see Ross Trent is training. Because they were just talking about how badass Spartacus is, and he was...
The legend.
Yeah, and how, you know, he took out Theocles. So now we have a scene where Ross Trent's training out in the yard, and he actually ends up killing one of those new recruits
that
while...
That poor guy was just saying how much he's going to be a badass.
I know.
Yeah, he said, I'm going to train, and I'm going to do everything Spartacus tells me to.
Sounds like he would have been a good, you know, gladiator.
A good ally for Spartacus, too. Yeah. He's idolizing him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so and while he's fighting him before he kills him, he's projecting these challenging looks toward Spartacus, and which I thought Spartacus would take offense, but Spartacus ends up taking him under his wing and decides to train him.
I think he gets
that's
it.
Not just yet, yeah.
Instead of spurring him like Crixus did.
Right.
Keep your enemy at your back, bring him in with you.
So we have a scene now with... Where we're seeing that...
Now, quick question. What were the nails doing on the wall that he got impaled in? Are they there for that?
I don't think so. I think they were probably there to hang weapons or whips or practice swords or something. Hmm. You know? It was probably just a convenient plot.
It was another
device,
body going over
it
the
It could
edge.
Have been yeah. left over from a previous crucifixion or something.
Yeah.
Or...
And they kept... Well, you know, I'll wait till that scene. I was about to say they kept the body. He didn't just go straight over the cliff.
No. I have to keep a lookout, but I think next episode you can see stains on the wall where he was. I might be wrong. It's been a while since, well, I just watched it, but I didn't really pay attention this past time. Anyway, so we see, we learn here that Crixus has been costing Badiatis by all the herbs they're having to buy to heal him. And Asher tries to use this fact to influence Badiatis into seeing that Crixus is more of a liability. And Asher suggests selling Crixus. Badiatis tells him to remove thought from head, but Asher does not give up. And he continues, and Badiatis actually starts to listen and entertain the idea. Lucretia overhears this, as well as Navia. Badiatis and Lucretia argue at this point, and Lucretia says Crixus is part of the family. Badiatis says he is a slave, and he even gestures towards Navia and points to her, and he says, the time will come for them all, meaning at some point they're all going to have to leave. And I think he does that to let her know that, yeah, Navia is close to you. I mean, she could also be gone.
I think Badiatis was just handing down a reality check to everybody in the house because he's basically saying, this is a business. And these slaves are here to make us money or to make our lives easier. And once they stop doing either one of those, they become of no utility to us. Yeah. And therefore, we either get rid of them one way or another.
They go to the glue factory.
Yeah, they go to the glue factory. They go over the cliff or they get sold to the, you know, the other jackass down the street or, mm-hmm. or what have you. And it's an important point to make because, I mean, you've got Lucretia, who's the domina of the house, and, you know, she's got this body slave that she holds in high regard, or if not in high regard, at least she treats pretty well. And then she's got one of the star gladiators who's just kind of like her stud, mm-hmm. you know, so she's a lot closer to the help than she really should be. And so,
yeah. Well, to that one, I don't think she cares about the rest of them.
No, yeah, I guess it's just those two, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think she gets, you're right. I don't think she gives a shit about the rest of them.
So we have a scene where a new recruits train. Crixus looks on. Spartacus is training. He's actually, at this point, training Ross Trent. Navia calls to Crixus, calls him over to the gate, and she tells him of Bodiatus's possible intent to sell him. Navia tells Crixus that he must prove that his time has not passed. And he ends up doing the opposite. He challenges Spartacus and does not go very well for Crixus.
Spartacus just basically kicks his ass because this is also a parallel to the older mm-hmm. episode in a way, too, because the positions are pretty much reversed. You know, Spartacus was in a bad state. You know, he was just you know, the Romans had just sold him into slavery, so he was hurt. His injuries probably weren't as extensive as Crixus's are now, but he was beat down, and you know, Crixus just manhandled him, so it's completely the opposite. And I'm not gonna lie, I like Crixus as a character, especially now, but even then I was starting to warm up towards mm-hmm. him. But it was kind of nice to see him get his ass kicked because of all the damage that he had laid on Spartacus absolutely. In the past. So
he got his comeuppance.
You feel the same way watching it this time too?
Yeah,
watching it this time, I actually just I feel bad more than anything else. I feel like
that guy's been a dick to a lot of people. He got what he needed.
He has, but if you watch further, I understand
why.
You know,
that's fine. But I understand why, but let Spartacus have his day in the sun. I'm sure he doesn't get a whole lot.
See, that's exactly how I felt on the first mm-hmm. viewing. But I'm saying as a rewatcher,
what happens down the road.
Yeah, I know what happens down the road, mm-hmm. and I end up in this instance just really feeling bad for him. Is all. Mm-hmm. I just, every time he got punched in the face, I was just like,
Well, it's like this in real life, though, with sports. You know, the older athletes, you know, they want to stay in the game, but they get hurt, and then they try and get back in. So this isn't a new concept. I mean, it really does happen all the time. Not exactly with getting your ass kicked, but...
Unless it's boxing.
Well, even MMA fights. You know, a lot of those guys get those one of the last two fights in. George Foreman, his last couple fights, he just got his face smashed in.
I wouldn't say Crixus is old, though. He's just wounded.
Yeah, that's the difference, yeah. Cause...
And I felt like this time on rewatch, Spartacus was quite cocky. And I think Doctore felt the same. But then, of course, like, we had that scene between Doctore and Spartacus last episode where... Doctore basically lets him know, I know what you tried to do. I know you tried to break out of here when your wife got here. And, you know, if I see you doing that again.
You don't think Doctore is happy with the way he's acting now, though?
I don't think he was with that situation. Because right after, you see Doctore just look towards, because Spartacus is kind of like walking past him. And you see Doctore and he looks disapproving to
but
me.
But that's the guy they created, though. They.
But I think Doctore prefers the gladiator that's more along the lines of Crixus. When the brother.
But
the brother.
Crixus did it to Spartacus in the second episode. The
yeah,
same
but
thing.
See, the one question I wanted to ask you guys, do you believe that Spartacus actually believed Crixus when Crixus said he was fully healed? Because I do not. And I think he fought him anyway, knowing that he wasn't fully healed, where Crixus in episode 2 said to him, I will wait till you're fully healed, and then we'll fight. So I think that's the difference between the two of them. I think Crixus has, when it comes to the gladiator arts, Spartacus has honor when it comes to taking care of the little guy. Mm-hmm. That's his path. But Crixus, he very much holds in high regard the brotherhood taking
care
of each
other.
And
Spartacus,
I don't think he would have done the same.
Trying to keep the new recruits eating food. He's
yeah,
he's
that's,
showing
that's
compassion
the little guy.
That.
Yeah, that's the little guy that he's. Yeah, that's what I was talking
I don't
about.
I don't know. I see it just as him finally getting a little revenge on Crixus, which is all right because the guy made his life a living hell from the beginning. All the hazing and all that, that's why hazing keeps going, because then you give it to the next person. I just think Spartacus gave him a chance and was like, all right, I'll do it.
You look at it, you know, if you look at it from Spartacus's point of view, here's this person he's fighting who was just about to kill him on several different occasions. If either of Doctoria or Badiatis didn't steal his hand, he would have just cut his throat or bashed his skull in or, you know, put a
But
Crixus sword
almost
through his heart.
Killed him in the second episode, didn't he?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like Crixus has been almost there doing it. So I kind of see why Spartacus can, you know,
it's just,
unleash a little bit of fury.
He's
on
getting
him.
Back at the bully is what he was doing, which Crixus has been a bully just about to everybody. And now that he's a little weak, you feel bad for him, but he's still a bully.
There's also probably an element of Spartacus is now the champion. He's the leader.
Which is
of
like
everybody
enough revenge right there.
Yeah, no, you could look at it that way, but I think he's trying to live he's trying to act in accordance with what he feels like his new station is. And he might be overdoing it a little, but I think that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah, I don't think, to me, you know, despite, you know, whether Crixus deserves it or not, Spartacus hasn't been fully humbled like he needs to be.
Man,
and I think this scene shows it. So,
I see what you mean.
All right, let's agree to disagree. And just
well,
on,
yeah, but I can't comment on that
really
either.
I know, because I haven't.
Yeah, because you haven't seen the stuff, so can't really comment.
I've seen just as much as you have, and I still don't totally agree with that. So I believe he's been humbled more than enough, but I don't necessarily agree with the way he's acting right now.
I'm not saying
he's doing
deserves-
it because he has to try to live up to this idea of who he's supposed to be as the champion of Capua and the leader of the Ludus.
Yeah, he's bought into the wrong idea. And so he's acting out of accordance instead of being the man he needs to be. So he's not being that fully compassionate man.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
So this other person that he's being is not...
to Crixus, though. He's just been this way to Crixus. Everybody else, he's been all right. Crixus treated him like crap.
He's acting like Crixus did.
Not really, because he's taking the guy under his wing. He's helping the recruits.
That's his true path, but it's not. It doesn't carry over into other areas.
Look, I agree that he's not being the person that he's supposed to be, and he's not being as compassionate and the real leader that he's supposed to be. I think he's living up to a false ideal. But I don't agree with the fact that he needs to be humbled any further than he has.
He has not learned the lesson that Crixus is trying to teach him, because Crixus is
bully.
Crixus is a bully, but Crixus is also trying to teach him about the Brotherhood, and Crixus is not his enemy.
Mm.
And so once
you got to put that, I think you got to put yourself in Spartacus's shoes. That's all. Because I see him being nice to everybody, but Crixus was rude to him from day one. From the second he's met him, the guy's talking smack to him, swinging his dong in his face. And then the whole time, he's just mean to him. So eventually, he's like, yeah, I'm in charge now. We're going to treat the recruits the way I want it. It's kind of like, this is your reality now. Just like they did with Spartacus. This is your reality now. You can either go with it. And I agree he needs to do the Brotherhood thing. But to do the Brotherhood thing, you have to kind of be a little nicer to your brothers instead of treating them like shit when they first show up.
I think they're at an impasse, because they've had conversations when Crixus was healing. Mm-hmm. You know, they try to talk and stuff like that, and they just haven't come to.
They just hate each other.
They're not on the same page yet.
All right, moving along.
Moving on. So Asher, I think, wasn't Asher watching that? No, that was a different thing. Anyway, so Asher encounters Solonius. This is actually a really good scene. Solonius gives coin and warning, and he tries to buy Asher's loyalty. Asher says, I really like this line. It sounds like something from Shakespeare. Asher says, I am a villain, but not your villain.
And then he gives some money back.
He gives his money back. But then Solonius tells him that his shoulders are broad and more.
He told him his shoulders were broad and more welcoming in context. So he told him that because he says loyalty is basically a good virtue, but any back can break under the pressure of it. And he goes, I think you'll find that my shoulders are
broad and welcoming.
Broad and welcoming. So.
Hmm. So next scene, we got Spartacus and Crixus again. Crixus reminds Spartacus he did not arrive to his current position alone. Any comments? Have we already exhausted that?
Yeah. Crixus has a valid point here. I was absolutely defending Spartacus earlier, but Crixus has a totally valid point here. He said, you didn't kill Theocles by yourself.
Oh, no.
You know, and he goes, and if it wasn't for my effort in the arena at that time, you'd be dead.
Mm-hmm.
And Spartacus doesn't have anything to argue with him about it. He says, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And Crixus probably did not get coin, and he's just been wounded, and now he's about to be sold. So can't blame him for being pissed off. Put yourself in Crixus' shoes.
Yeah, well, it sucks to be a slave.
Yes, it does. Crixus is starting to see.
You have to understand,
that.
Though. I mean,
Crixus, that's also what Crixus needs to start to see, and he's starting to see
we're
that.
We're trying to get, you know, I feel like we're trying to get some sympathy for Crixus elicited out of us in this instance. If we, you know, rewind back a couple of episodes, he's the one who told Spartacus to stay out of his way. I'm going to kill Theocles because I'm going to steal all the glory.
But he still helped
it's
Spartacus.
His fault that he's in this position.
Yes, his pride did.
Without Spartacus, he would have been killed in the arena.
Yeah.
They would have given him the...
Yeah.
Yes, but he did end up helping Spartacus in the end. So
yeah, he might have been able to jump on the shield. With him just laying there. Okay.
So I mean, we can
positioned it in a
we've
certain
kinda,
way.
We've kind of spent a lot of time on this particular podcast talking about how Spartacus could act in a different way, but Crixus, you know, his actions are directly responsible for the plight that he's in right now, his injuries, mm-hmm. and the way that people are viewing him, and the way that the, you know, the Domina is thinking about getting rid of him.
He's
stuff.
Expendable, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we'll get some feedback on it and see what people think.
See what people think. Tell us what you think. Who's right?
Yeah. But this is something that Crixus does need to go through because gladiators are the most privileged slave, and he's not actually acting as a gladiator, so mm-hmm. he's actually being treated more like a slave rather than a gladiator. So this is very important to his character development. So next scene we have Alethea introducing her friends to Lucretia. This is where we get to meet the Heathers. Mm-hmm. Yes. The important thing about this scene is that we see Lycinia has a similar appetite as Alethea. She seems to like the gladiators, and that Alethea's friends are not that friendly toward Alethea. There's some backbiting.
It's pretty catty.
Yeah.
Actually.
Lucretia also notices this.
Housewives of Rome.
And they are not impressed with Alethea's new purchase, but they would rather see someone of significance, and they request Spartacus. Actually, Lycinia requests Spartacus. And there's actually a look that transpires between Lycinia and Lucretia at this point, and it's like a look of understanding because Lucretia catches on that Lycinia is doing this to piss off Alethea,
mm-hmm.
and Lucretia likes it. Lycinia sees that Lucretia likes it, and they're both just
they're
like...
They're all playing their games.
Mm, yeah. And...
Do you think Spartacus's legend has gone all the way through to Rome? Just
yeah.
Without her telling him? Like, do you think it's just spread that he's, you know, just this badass?
The champion of Capua?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think his legend has spread.
Spread that far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that was part of the montage at the beginning. That's what that was supposed mm-hmm. to serve to do to let you know. It's kind of like when the beginning of Rocky III, mm-hmm. when they show him fighting all those
taking people
out. And it's like kind of cementing your legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So next we have a scene between Ross Trent and Spartacus. And Ross Trent's thanking Spartacus. And this time for the aid in his training. And it looks like Ross Trent is sold on the idea of victory and the future of earned freedom. And Spartacus tells him to forsake these thoughts of freedom and accept his fate. And then Spartacus is summoned.
But hold on, before we move on from that, while he's telling them that, he says, you know, put that out of your mind. You know, you're not, don't think about freedom. You need to think about being
staying
a gladiator
alive.
And staying alive and doing all this other stuff. Crixus is also present in the room. He walks in at the beginning of that conversation, and they show a camera angle that shows his face, and his eyes are kind of looking off to the side, and he's kind of dropping eaves, and he's listening to their conversation. And I don't think they really show it on his face, but he's approving of what Spartacus is saying to him. He's saying, okay, I think this guy is finally starting to come around and get it mm-hmm. and get, you know, to understand what it means to be a gladiator and what it means to be part of the Brotherhood. And, you know, maybe if only on a rudimentary level now, but he's getting there. I mean, what do you think?
I was just going to make me talk about how Crixus is, you know, it's more about people aren't doing what he thinks is correct.
Just so you know, everybody's listening to this on audio. There's no video, but she's wearing a shirt that says, I heart Crixus.
I need to get a shirt that says, I heart Crixus. But so, okay.
Or seven of them, so you can wear one each day of the week.
Party bar.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we've got Spartacus has been brought into the room with the ladies, and Licinia is admiring Spartacus very up close. She's actually rubbing his pecs, isn't she?
They seem to go for the pecs first.
Yeah.
Every time they bring any of them around, they're always like, ooh.
Pecs.
Pec shining.
So Licinia asks if he is blessed. He says, to some, but to others, a curse, and he eyes Alethea suggestively. And she returns with her own jab, saying, yeah, he's blessed to be a gladiator, but he's still a slave.
She hates it. She does. All because of her old man.
And Licinia has heard rumors that gladiator blood can keep a man's dick hard for days, apparently. So she wants some, and she wants it now. Because she gets everything now. The way she said it, I want it now. So Alethea quickly offers to draw the blood herself. And that knife was just conveniently on that table. We have some knife and wordplay here between Spartacus and Alethea. But Spartacus delivers the ultimate snap. And Licinia and the other Heathers agree with Spartacus, like, openly. And they laugh their way out of the room at Alethea's expense.
What was the last jab? Do you guys remember? I'm trying to remember.
He says, because she tries to say, well, you were a traitor or a coward. You left. And he's like, no, it was your husband who left a village to basically be slaughtered and the women to be raped.
And the children.
Yeah.
And the children to be killed and everything. He just kind of dressed her down and said that your husband is the one who was deceitful and traitorous.
Mm-hmm. And then she tried to say something in response to that. And Licinia and the, like, no,
we've all heard about your husband.
Yeah, he did that. We know. So, so she.
Mm-hmm. It was basically one of those instances where Alethea needed to tip 20% because she just got served.
Oh, yeah.
And so they leave, but with Licinia basically saying that she will come back. And Lucretia seems to support Alethea. Offer like comforting words and gestures, and Alethea at this point requests to visit her slave because she needs to wish him luck in his training. You would think at first.
That's what they want you to think. Yeah. That's what they want you to think at first.
And Spartacus joins Varro at gambling.
Poor Tommy Gunn is still reeling from his wife doing that. He went straight to the bad habits. Find out his wife's cheating, spending up all of his money. Because we know he's not a good gambler, otherwise he wouldn't be in
the
position.
Yeah, he wouldn't know all that money.
Which I didn't bring up. Yeah, that conversation happened earlier. They actually talk about that.
Yeah, he's like, sending wife back to your family or the whore and the money here.
Which Spartacus only supported my argument that we had a couple podcasts ago, and I was like, go Spartacus. Thanks for the support. So anyway,
I don't remember this.
We were talking about whether she was raped or not. Remember his wife?
Oh yeah.
Hold on. The question of whether or not she was raped, regardless of what I believe, I don't think that Spartacus's attitude towards Varro vindicates the notion that she wasn't raped. I think Spartacus is just trying to say it doesn't matter. She's still alive.
Still your wife,
and she's still your wife.
He says it wouldn't have happened if you weren't there.
That's true. It wouldn't have happened if
He said she wouldn't have had to fight if you weren't there, is what he said.
Well, she wouldn't have had to be in that situation at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Gambling.
Moving on. So Alethea meets with her recruit. She bribes him with freedom. She needs him to do something for her.
An undisclosed task.
Mm-hmm.
Body Otis is pissed about Spartacus being summoned, but is assuaged when he finds out it reaped Licinia's interest. Body Otis makes it known he plans to sell Crixus to Ludus in Damascus. Lucretia is not happy, which is predictable. Navia tells Crixus. Crixus is resigned to his fate, because Navia overheard all that. Mm-hmm. So she goes and tells Crixus. Crixus is resigned to his fate. Navia talks Crixus into seducing Lucretia, thinking that, well, if he goes and screws her really good, that mm-hmm. will turn the tide, apparently.
She's kind of right. At least for Lucretia's part in
it. The deed happened after Body Otis left, though, so.
Yeah.
So Spartacus gives Varro back his coin that he lost to Spartacus. Spartacus tries to get through to Varro. Varro tells Spartacus what... Oh, this is where he tells about what he has learned about his wife, so I didn't...
Yeah, Tommy Gunn's in a bad place. Spartacus is trying to help.
And then Spartacus reminds Varro that his wife lives, so that should be enough.
Well, I mean, it's still tough. You know, he got the... I feel for the guy. I know
Tommy Gunn?
I do. I feel bad for him. He's going through a rough patch. Unfortunately, he's just making worse decisions instead of doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bad habits coming back to get him.
He feels bad, so I guess that's... He gets, like, temporary good feelings when he gambles and...
Oh, yeah, he gets a rush. It's his escape. It's kind of like... that's why they have Gamblers Anonymous. It's like a drug. You know, while you're playing the game and doing that, you don't, you know, you kind of lose touch with what's going on. You're just focused on gambling.
1-800-ADMIT-IT.
I just saw that the other day. Yeah. Hulu special.
So you notice he does actually take the money, though. Mm-hmm. Varro does take the money back. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to at first, but he does take it eventually.
So now we go to the scene where Crixus is working his magic on Lucretia. Navia watches painfully in the background.
See, and that goes back. Somebody's watching.
Yeah, somebody's always watching.
They're always putting on a show for somebody walking
more
by.
More so in this episode.
In every episode, when has there been... Oh, no, Spartacus got some... Maybe that's why he had the sex in the woods. A little bit of privacy.
Yeah, nobody's watching at all.
For once, we're alone.
The village is completely decimated. Yeah. Nobody's watching. Let's have sex.
It's our chance to have private sex.
That's what it was. That was the reason. Found it finally.
Fear boner.
So, that's but really what it was. Crixus, even though he's performed this task, he still resigned to his fate. He can look really wounded. Yes, I heart Crixus, whatever.
Yeah, so. A good thank you. Thank you. Didn't save me from saying
that. So now we've got Spartacus sitting at the bathing pool. He's attacked from behind by Ross Trent. This is what Alithia
I want
wanted
guy
of him.
Attacking me from behind.
Yeah. Whew. That's some attack right there. Smorgasbord. But, and
Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Smorgasbord, yes.
And there's no, you know, there's no honor in it. This isn't a straight fight. This is just an assassination. He's got a cord and he's just going to choke the life out of him. And he's even apologizing to him as he does it because he likes the guy. You know, he's like, I'm sorry. And he pretty much has him because, I mean, what can you do when you're getting the breath choked out of you?
He was about to succumb to that, Spartacus was, before Crixus comes to the rescue and he curb checks the dude.
Oh, yeah.
After
beats his ass. Mm-hmm. And then did you see the teeth flying when he slams his head on the
curb bite him?
Oh, man.
That's the little things that are good about the show.
Yeah.
The teeth flying, the blood.
So do we pretty much go from this scene to the?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you know, Crixus does say he did not save Spartacus. He saved a brother who shares the mark.
Well, yeah, because Spartacus asks him. He says, mm-hmm. you would kill another Gaul to save a Thracian's life or to save my life. And he says, I didn't save Spartacus's life. You know, I saved a brother who bears the mark.
Dick.
Yeah. I heart Crixus. Okay. Body Otis is having a meltdown now. Like
I can't leave. He's like Clark Griswold. You know what I mean? He's having a Griswold movie. He's like, I can't fucking leave for 5 minutes without you kids fucking something up. You know, don't touch.
But the cool thing is Crixus is no longer for sale. And Alithia feigns surprise at Spartacus's attack. She's actually pretty good at feigning surprise.
Until she looks down into the Ludus and she's like, Spartacus yet lives, and it kind of betrays the fact that she had like, set her to the test.
The Bodiatus is like, yet.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yet.
You little twerp.
But he has a good line when he sees her coming down the hallway to go, and he's, I can't remember what
he says, look at that, a snake upright and walking like it's human.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Or says, here comes a snake. And walking upright, like as if it were human.
Yeah.
He gets the best little like snide lines that nobody else gets to hear, you know. And he says it like right before or right after these people are coming onto the
screen. I read an interview with Stephen S. tonight, and he was saying if you notice, Spartacus never cusses. He might say shit, but he never cusses. But Bodiatus lets that shit fly. So it's
part of. Hasn't he said cock a few times? Is that considered cussing? I guess not really. Is it? It's just cock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though you're saying Jupiter's cock, it's kind of like.
I think it's more just the saying fuck and stuff like that. That's more of the.
Like actual. Makes sense. Just throwing that out there.
Kind of ones that your mom would slap you over.
Oh, she'd slap me anyway.
So Alethea's slave is crucified. It is revealed he did not give reason to his motive, even when parted from his cock.
Which is surprising that they actually did it.
Yeah, they cut his dick off. That was just to try to get him to say who, you know, wanted him to try to
do. At that point. I'm not going to lie. If you're going to cut my dick off, I'm going to tell you.
Why didn't he? You think he was still hoping that she would at some point give him his freedom?
That has to be it.
Just,
it's not like they cut out his tongue at that point. I mean, he could have still yelled something or.
I know, I would have.
But I think that he thought she was going to save him at some point. And then, you know, I don't think he has any loyalty towards her outside of whatever, you know, whatever chances that he had at freedom.
I think they just wanted to show him without a cock.
Yeah.
His new mangina.
It's like a fountain of blood.
Oh, it's nasty.
Oof. Crixus tells Spartacus he will be champion again, and Spartacus welcomes the attempt. They're on the same page now. They're brothers now.
Brothers.
Brothers.
Brothers don't shake hands.
Brothers got a hug.
All right. That was Mark of the Brotherhood. Next episode, we will talk about Spartacus, episode 9, Whore. All right.
Whore. There's no sex in this one. Amazingly enough, it's sex free.
Yeah, right. An episode of Spartacus without sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't believe it.
I actually think the next episode has more sex probably than any episode.
It may have more sex than all the other episodes combined.
Is somebody going to be watching the whole time? Is there like...
Just us, isn't it? Just us. We'll be watching.
Okay. It's like they just wait for the eye contact. It's like, all right, they haven't seen me yet.
Well, you guys give us some feedback on what you think on the Crixus versus Spartacus dynamic in this episode. Tell us what you think, because we'd all like to know.
Yeah, definitely. Give us something to discuss.
All right. Who's on the I Heart Crixus team? All right. Good night. This was a No Ship Network podcast brought to you by Esoteric Studios and Axolotl Tank Productions.